following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 9th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It's another beautiful day in Auburn, Alabama, and man, do we have a lot to get to on the show today. Wednesdays are a lot of fun around here because we get updates from Athens, Georgia, from Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He'll be with us coming up in about 30 minutes as Georgia trying to continue to bounce back from what happened against Alabama. The Dogs will have Mississippi State this weekend, and so we're going to have him on coming up in about 30 minutes. And as most of you know, Double D Wednesday, right? It's Daryl Dapprich. He'll be with us coming up in hour number two. He will join us at 3:15. Very, very excited to talk with Daryl about Auburn, their game against Georgia from last week, what the bye week should look like, what it could look like, and of course, the rest of the season as well. And I feel like we're going to get into some of the big college football storylines with Daryl today as well. So that's coming up at 3:15. Other than that, though, it's you and me. That's what Wednesdays are about, you and me. And I'm excited to be in the studio today. And as I said, lots to get to on the show. Phone lines are open for now, 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to me, 334-321-1390. What's on your mind on this Wednesday afternoon? What do you want to talk about on the show today? Something that you can't get over, something itching your brain, something that you just want to ask a question or talk about it? Give me a call, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot me a text in the On the Line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. And I want to start the show today with two huge, huge topics and pieces of news that we got late yesterday afternoon. Believe I was already off the air, but we got news yesterday afternoon, yesterday evening, that college football has changed yet again. College football rules are on the move once again, and it's something that we figured was coming. We just didn't know in what aspect and in what size or what amount, I guess. In case you missed it, the NCAA's Division I Council votes to shorten the transfer portal windows for the FBS and the FCS football levels, along with men and women's basketball, according to the NCAA on Tuesday. There's a million articles out there where you can find it. I'm going through the ESPN article from Max Olson, which I think explains it all very, very well in very simplistic terms. Okay, he says here, quote, "The D1 Council reduced the total number of days players in FBS and FBS can enter the transfer portal from 45 down to 30 days, but they preserved the spring transfer window. They'll move forward with a 20-day winter transfer window. This season will be December 9th. That's the Monday after conference championship games through December 28th. And a 10-day spring window from April 16th to April 25th. Now, there's a lot more here that we need to get to. But that news in itself, folks, that's a really, really big deal. That's a really big move. They just took out 15 days of the transfer portal window for a college football player. And I know there's a lot of thoughts on this, and I know you have thoughts on this, so give me a call. But at the end of the day, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. This is what coaches have been asking for. I think a lot of media people have been asking for. I think a lot of fans have been asking for. And the NCAA and this council, right, there's all sorts of legal action going on and settlements going on. And I mean, this is it's a murky situation. And 2 hours isn't enough to get into all the details. But what you need to know is the fact that it went from a transfer portal window for college football players of 45 total days down to 30. You'll have 20 days in December, the Monday after conference championship games, through December 28th. All right, so almost through the end of December. And then you still have that spring transfer portal window of now just 10 days. They took 10 off the first one and 5 off the second one. From April 16th to April 25th. Overall, my initial reaction is, this is a good thing. This is good. This makes it easier for coaches to manage their roster and manage the transfer portal and figure out what the heck is going on. Because 45 days of not knowing who is on your roster and at the same time trying to go fill out your roster, man, that's miserable. That's a terrible experience. That's a terrible spot to be in, and that's got to be stressful. We enjoy covering it just because, I mean, there's always news happening when the transfer portal's running wild. But in terms of what coaches like Hugh Freeze have talked about, this is going to make their lives hopefully a little bit easier. It's still going to be the wild, wild west, and you could make the argument that now, because there's less days, it will be more chaotic. Where there used to be maybe a day or two that didn't have any news or didn't have any relevant news. Not anymore. Not anymore. That 20-day window in the winter right after conference championship games is going to be wild. And that spring portal window, where all the spring practices are wrapping up, where all the spring games are wrapping up, oh my gosh, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be even more insane and more intense. The more I talk about it, the crazier I think it's going to be. But there are a lot of people here. And again, give me your thoughts, 334-321-1390 on the phone lines, or shoot me a text, 334-784-1067. There are a lot of people who are still upset that the spring window exists. And the NCAA, their oversight committees of the FBS and FCS, they actually had pushed to eliminate this. They pushed to eliminate the spring window altogether. Some people agree with that. Some people don't. I think there's pros and cons both ways. I think if you eliminate that spring portal window, right, you're telling them, hey, You've got 20 days in December. The season's over. Do you want to go somewhere else or do you want to stay here? You've got 20 days right now to figure it out. Which, no, is not a very long time to try to decide your future and figure out what you want your next step in life to be. I get that. But at the same time, these kids are not kids anymore. They're being treated like straight-up adults. And so 20 days should be enough for you to figure it out. Because there are a lot of people, and coaches are in this boat, where they're thinking, man, we're going to get out of December, right? We're going to get out of next season, or out of this season, rather. We're going to move into this next season. We're going to go through the spring, and every single day that I show up to practice, that I coach my team, I don't know which ones are going to be here a month from now. I don't know which ones are going to be here on April 26th. That's a bad spot to be in, man. That's stressful as heck, man. That is stressful to not know who's going to leave. on who's going to be on your team. So I feel most coaches want to get rid of the spring window altogether. But on the flip side, the reason the spring window exists is because you never know what's going to happen. And a kid may want to be at a place in December and may feel that staying there is the best move for him, but 4 months later realizes, oh, this is not what I thought it was going to be going into this next season. This other guy shows up, right? Or I just got beat out, or they don't have the money for me, or I just don't want to be in school here anymore. Whatever the case may be, you have family problems, you have personal problems, whatever the case may be, the spring window gives them an extra opportunity to get out. And I'm not going to say it gives them an extra opportunity to bail on their team, because it's not always like that. That's how some people will phrase it, and that's fine. Some people will phrase it as you're abandoning your team, you're giving up, you're quitting, whatever. Purist will say it that way. But I feel that it is necessary to allow them to have that little window. I do like that they shortened it. It's no longer 15, or it's no longer, it's 10 days now. You have 20 days on the front end and 10 days on the back end. So they shortened that one by 5. And overall, this is a good move. This is a really, really good move. And I like to think that it's going to make this easier. I like to think that it's going to make this better for college football as a whole, for college coaches, college athletes, college fans, college administrators. I just feel that this is going to be the right move. And for college football, again, if you didn't see this or you're just now tuning in, yesterday evening, it was approved that the transfer portal window for college football has been decreased from 45 days down to 30 days. Both of the winter and spring windows still exist. It is now a 20-day winter window from December 9th to the Monday after conference championship games, which is the Monday after conference championship games through December 28th, and a 10-day spring window from April 16th to April 25th. There's also news in the men and women's basketball world. They will also, this is according to the article on ESPN, says they will also move from a 45-day to a 30-day transfer window that will open the day after the end of the second round of their respective NCAA tournaments. And the transfer window in basketball, if you remember, previously opened on the day after Selection Sunday. So they've moved the date that it opens, and they've shortened that one as well. College basketball is going to be crazy too. Think about that. The transfer portal is going to open up in the middle of the NCAA tournament. It was already jacked up because it opened up on Selection Sunday. But now, after the second round, that's when it's going to open up, and you have a month. A month. And remember, that's the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. That's the middle of March. The national championship game runs through the first weekend of April. So if your team is good enough, for example here, and there's a lot of conversation about this on the football side too in terms of the dates and the confusion that's going to be caused here. But think about basketball for a second. Let's take Auburn for example. Let's just take Auburn for example. Bruce Pearl's squad, one that we believe is one of the best he's ever had. Let's say they make a run to the Final Four. Just for example, make a run to the Final Four. I have not looked at the actual dates, but if I look at a calendar, I can take a pretty good guess as I pull it up here right now. My guess would be the Final Four is going to be March 29th on that Saturday, with the national championship game most likely being on March 31st. That's my guess. And I can look it up, or if somebody can text me and confirm me that. So you make a run to the Final Four, But remember, the portal opened up 2 weeks earlier. 2 weeks earlier. You have 2 weeks. You have 2 weeks to fill your roster with the transfer portal if that's what you need to do or that's what you decide to do. Man, that's messed up. That's messed up. That's not right. That's not enough time. You get punished for being a good team in the postseason. In terms of the transfer portal, you get punished. And I just looked it up. The Final Four this year, no, I was a week off. It's April 5th. April 5th is the Final Four in San Antonio in 2025. Which means the tournament starts, I'm looking at it right here, the second round will end on the 23rd. Holy smokes. Yeah, you're going to have 2 weeks. If you make a run to the Final Four in college basketball, you will miss half of the transfer portal window because you're preparing for games in the tournament, or you're just going to have to prepare for games and you're going to have to scout the transfer portal at the same time. What about a kid that's on the roster? What is he supposed to do? What is a player on the roster supposed to do if his team's making a run but he doesn't want to be there anymore? You're going to give him 2 weeks to find a new home? Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. And look at the college football side of this. Again, the dates on that. It opens up the winter window the Monday after conference championship games, aka right before bowl season. And it closes on December 28th, right before the playoff gets rolling. And the 10-day spring window, we already had problems with the portal opening up before people were done with spring practice, before spring games were done. We already had that problem. Maybe shortening the window, does it fix that? Maybe. That may have actually fixed that one. But the winter window opens the Monday after conference championship games. So bowl games will continue to be worthless because more and more players are going to enter because you have less time to do it. You see where I'm going with all this? There are pros and there are cons. Where do you fall on this? Where do you fall on all these new transfer portal window dates being moved around? They're shortened across the board in football and basketball. They've been shortened and they've been shifted around on the calendar a little bit. I want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We'll take our first break in hour number one. That's not the only thing we've learned in terms of changes around college athletics. Another big one's been announced today. We'll have that for you when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Reminder, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joins us coming up in our next segment. We'll talk to him about all things Georgia athletics. So still time for you to get in here on the show, 334-321-1390. While we learned a lot yesterday afternoon about the transfer portal windows for college football, college basketball being shortened, being moved, all of that, we also learned something else today. There's more news today about the fact that now, right along with the transfer portal windows being shifted around, it supposedly was reported, and I've seen it. It's on. You can check it out. The NLI, not the NIL. There's a difference. The NLI, the National Letter of Intent. You remember what that is? That's the legally binding document that is signed by a high school athlete that says, I hereby state I am attending your school to play X sport, football, basketball, cross country, bowling, whatever the case may be. I am signing this letter of intent to play this particular sport for your university. All right, that's that side of it. The other side is the university that signs it and says, we hereby claim that you will play this sport for us, and we will provide this, 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 and this. Scholarship, housing, whatever, whatever, right? The national letter of intent. In the past, as some would say, in the good old days, the NLI was the lock. It was the lock and chain. It was the stamp of approval. It was the finalized, boom, it was done. When a kid signed his NLI, she signed her NLI, it was done. The recruitment was over. Schools were not allowed to contact them. They were not to contact other schools. That was when the recruitment was over. The saga was done. And you knew that you had locked up that quarterback or that shooting guard or that pole vaulter, whatever. Now, a lot of us know that NLIs became less and less, I don't know, valuable, respected as the years have gone on. But the piece of news here, I've buried the lead a little bit, NLIs no longer are a thing. They will no longer exist. NLIs will not be a part of the process anymore. You don't have to sign one. According to this article here, it says that the NCAA Division I Council has voted to abolish the National Letter of Intent program. Goes on to say the council approved the major change to the structure of college football recruiting on Wednesday as the sport goes away from the amateurism and is now going to the more employment model. Right, it goes on to talk about what NIL is and or NLI, sorry, NLI is yada yada yada. Right, it was what told everybody, hey, this is where I'm going to play whatever it is that I want to play at whatever school I want to go play it at. But that is no longer the case. That's no longer the case. NLI does not exist. And what this tells me is what I've been saying for quite some time, is we are well on our way, and this is an even bigger step closer to it. We are well on our way down the path to flat-out college athletic contracts. You want to play football at the University of Georgia? Good. Here's a contract. We're signing you for 3 years. We're going to give you this amount of money in scholarship. We're going to give you this amount of money in housing. We're going to give you this amount of money or, you know, options for food. You're going to have this amount of money for NIL. You're going to do this, 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 and this. You have to stay here for this long. You have to complete these requirements. Sign here. It will be a full-on contract. If you break said contract, you will lose everything. You will owe back whatever it is that we paid you. If you want to go somewhere else, that's fine. But you will be legally breaking a contract. This will now be the new NLI. And I do hate it. I do. I hate this idea that an NLI will no longer exist. And as I said before, they became worthless anyway. I mean, how many times have we seen in the past, oh, I don't know, 3 years, that when somebody with a big name too would sign their national letter of intent, they would request it to be shredded, ripped up, revoked, taken away, declined, whatever word. How many times have you seen that in the last handful of years? Quite a bit, actually. Quite a bit. And so they had become, I don't want to say worthless, but less binding, not as binding, I guess, is the best way to say it. I mean, it wasn't the guarantee that it used to be for all those years. And so, in that aspect, it makes sense. Like, look, let's just abolish this thing that doesn't really carry a whole lot of weight anyway, that they can just break it if they want to. Get the right lawyer, you can do anything, right? Seems to be the mindset nowadays. And we're going full on contracts. You want to play quarterback here? Cool. Sign this piece of paper. Oh, you want to negotiate? All right, cool. Find an agent. Find an agent. We'll sit down and talk. You want to be here for only 2 years with a third-year option? Okay, we'll talk about that. We'll see what we can do. Oh, you want more NIL money? Oh, you don't care about a scholarship? Oh, you don't want to play? You don't want to go to school? Oh, okay. Well, let's see what we can do. Oh, you want more money for food? Oh, you want this or you want that? You see what I'm saying here? You see it in professional sports every season, every day. Legitimate contracts are coming for college athletics. On how big of a scale, I have no idea. But that's exactly where we're headed. With no more national letter of intent, be ready for whoever signs that first college football contract. Isn't that a crazy idea? Isn't that wild to think about? Welcome to the new era, folks. College football, it's changing right in front of our eyes. All right, we got to get to break. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will join us from Athens coming up next. We'll talk everything Georgia athletics, including the Dogs who beat your Tigers last week, and they get another set of Dogs this week. Jordan Hill joins us next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins, and joining us on the phone lines, he does every Wednesday at 2:30, it's Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, boots on the ground in Athens, Georgia. Jordan, great to have you on. I told the fans, I told the listeners, I know that Georgia won, but Jordan didn't have anything to do with that, so we still bring you on, and we're still glad that you're with us, my man.
Right, and thankfully for the Bulldogs, I didn't have anything to do with it. They put me out there on the field. I don't know that it would have gone as well as it did for the Bulldogs.
Well, we know the result from last Saturday. Auburn went to Athens, first road trip of the season. We knew Georgia, of course, coming off of what happened with them and all the different storylines that were going into it. Ultimately, Georgia does get the win. What did you see from Georgia offensively, defensively, just as a whole to get the win over Auburn?
I think a big part of it was they finally started fast. They went down and scored a touchdown on their very first possession, which they had not done against FBS competition this year. So I thought that was a step in the right direction. Better on third downs, which I think was a product of having more successful first and second downs. Georgia winds up being 50% on third down, and it was their shortest distance to gain on third down that they've had this season against FBS competition. So that was important too. Getting Trevor Etienne rolling, I thought he was huge. I would have said he was your offensive MVP just with how he played and finding the end zone twice, very important. Defense, you know, was hit or miss at times, still struggled a bit tackling that on the edge. You saw that in Jarquez Hunter's big touchdown run. But, you know, it's one of those games where I know the final score was 18, but there was little moments here and there that broke Georgia's way that Auburn wasn't able to get. And, you know, going back and rewatching the game, felt like Auburn left some moments out on the table where it was, you know, penalties that wound up turning like a third and three into a third and eight. The possession right before halftime when they take the deep shot that, you know, it's maybe a yard or two outside of Cam Coleman. If they hit that, it's a different story. But that's sort of the nature of these games, especially if you're playing on the road like Auburn was. You've got to hit some of those big moments. Georgia had more of those big moments than Auburn, and I thought it made the difference in the end.
There's a lot of people here, and myself included in this, Jordan, where we feel in Auburn that Auburn played better than they have in a lot of the games this season. And I posed the question, which is tough to answer, but if it wasn't top five Georgia, was Auburn's performance good enough, or would they have performed good enough to win the ball game? And again, that's an impossible question to answer, but do you think that Auburn, because you've watched a lot of the games this season, and of course, used to cover Auburn. I mean, do you think Auburn played a better game than they have in the last couple, especially against a top five Georgia team?
Absolutely. I mean, to do what they did on the road, I mean, I know it's an 18-point loss. It's just a few moments here and there. I mentioned that deep shot to Cam Coleman that didn't hit. You know, obviously the fourth down run that Peyton kept the ball has been talked to death, and I'm sure it's going to be continued to talk about. But, you know, that, you know, the field goal before halftime, which was going to be a long one, but that gets blocked. I mean, that's significant as well. And the biggest thing to me about Auburn was they didn't turn the ball over. You know, I thought that that was huge. And really, other than that, I think if you're Auburn looking back at this game, you kind of wish you had gotten a few more big explosive plays. But part of that would have been getting Cam Coleman involved when he doesn't have any catches. So, now I thought Auburn played a good game. I think more than anything, you're just happy that you didn't turn the ball over. But, again, you know, games like this, even with an 18-point difference, you can point to five or six different plays that really swung the momentum in a team's favor. And Auburn didn't get enough of those. And you definitely got to have those on the road to have a chance. And just didn't make it happen.
Have you, speaking about the media here, have you guys had a chance to hear from Kirby Smart this week? And if so, what did he say about the game? Was he impressed overall with what Georgia did?
Yeah, I think he was pretty happy with the product. You know, he kind of pushed back on the fast start, mainly because of how the defense started. And, you know, Auburn had, I think, a 3rd and 9 on that opening drive, and they hit a screen to extend the drive. But no, I think on the whole, he was pretty happy, as I'm sure, Jacob, you've probably heard by now, he wasn't thrilled with the fans. I wanted to hear a little bit more energy and excitement, enthusiasm in a rivalry game. But no, I think on the whole, he was pretty happy. I mean, they didn't turn the ball over, showed up progress, I should say, on 3rd down. Got some good play out of Drew Bobo, former Auburn high school player. And I think on the whole, he's pretty happy with what he saw.
And, of course, this was a game coming off of the Alabama loss. Georgia wins 31-13. And as we look ahead to what Georgia has, I feel like I say this to you just about every week. I mean, the schedule, it's supposed to lighten up a little bit this week, Jordan, but then it just absolutely ramps up. Mississippi State at home this weekend. At number one, Texas coming up in next week's game. Florida at Ole Miss, Tennessee. I mean, this schedule, while Tennessee, yes, they lost, I mean, it's still not an easy path for the remaining season for the Dogs.
Definitely, and you even look a little further going to Ole Miss and then into the regular season against a pretty stingy Georgia Tech team, and that's going to be on a Black Friday, and I just have the weirdest suspicion that something weird is going to happen in that game. But, I mean, I think it's a really tough slate ahead, and I think that's part of why they need to take advantage of, let's be honest, I mean, it's an overwhelmed Mississippi State team, a team that has struggled, I think, more than most people expected in Jeff Lebby's first year. And losing Blake Shapen and the injury, that definitely made it a lot more difficult. But no, I mean, they know the road ahead. I do think, though, that this team understands it can't get caught looking ahead to Texas. They know that this is still a team with SEC talent coming in Mississippi State, and one that really, really needs a win. So I think they know that they've got a lot to do ahead, but they can't get caught looking ahead at Texas because, I mean, truthfully, Mississippi State played a pretty good game against Texas 2 weeks ago. I think they understand they cannot get caught playing with their food because otherwise they might be in for a long afternoon between the hedges.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up because Mississippi State 1-4 this season, 0-2 in SEC play, and the thing that is similar between their game against Texas and the game that they have coming up this Saturday against Georgia, the spread for Mississippi State when they went to Austin, I believe was sitting like 37, 38, possibly even got to 39. You start looking at what's going on this weekend between Mississippi State and Georgia, it's a 34-point spread. And has a chance to climb. I mean, in both of those scenarios, man, that's a lot of points in an SEC matchup. I don't care who it is.
No, for sure. And you look at the way they played Texas, I think that Mississippi State took advantage of some turnovers and was able to keep that thing close. But, I mean, again, I think that's sort of the key. And it's very cliche when I answer questions for a game like this. You know, what does Georgia need to do well? What are you looking for? And it's just not turning the ball over. And to Georgia's credit, they've done a very good job of not doing that to this point in the season. Did have those issues in the first half against Alabama, but did a good job of pretty much bouncing back and finishing that game strong. So, yeah, it's one of those games you understand the matchup, you understand you have the upper hand, but you need to play like it. You need to play like you are the better team. You can't get caught messing around. You can't kind of sleepwalk through a game like that because, again, this is a team that has talent. And if you get caught looking ahead or just trying to go through the motions, it's not going to make for a very pretty picture when it comes to what happens on the field.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joining us here on ESPN 106.7. Got to get your reactions to what's going on outside of Athens around the Southeastern Conference. Bama losing to Vanderbilt, Tennessee losing to Arkansas. I mean, chaos has just ensued around this conference, Jordan.
Yeah, and I for one, have been a big fan of it. It really feels like, as we've seen kind of on the whole in college football, it's kind of getting 2007 vibes with some of the different upsets and several different teams kind of pushing themselves forward. But I'd have to go look back and read the exact quote that Kirby had, but I thought he made a good point in saying that he kind of felt like the transfer portal has helped set this up where these games are so close, where the margin for error is so much smaller, because he basically said, you know, in the past, guys who would be backups on certain teams are now starting for maybe teams that we traditionally didn't see as, you know, the top teams. And that's why you have a situation like Diego Pavia, who did so well at New Mexico State, helping Vanderbilt beat Alabama. You see the Arkansas quarterback who came in from Boise helping them beat Tennessee. I think that the portal has helped some of these teams kind of close the talent gap, or at least make it a little bit closer than we've seen in the past. And I, for one, am all for it. It makes for fun. As a general college football fan, it makes you understand that you never know what is going to happen. I think Vanderbilt was about a 23-point underdog in that game against Alabama. It's got to keep these coaches on their toes for sure, because they understand one bad afternoon or even a bad quarter or two can lead to a monumental upset.
As we sit here on October 9th, this is exactly how everybody predicted the SEC standings to look. It's Texas A&M at the top and Auburn at the bottom. And it's that way because you've got an A&M team that's 3-0 in conference play, but the team behind them in Texas has only played one conference game. And then you have Auburn, who's 0-3 in conference play. I mean, it's so out of whack, right? And so many teams are in such different positions right now, Jordan, but everything is still on the table. The possibilities are truly endless.
Yeah, and I mean, personally, Jacob, I really enjoy that. I mean, I do an SEC ranking that a bunch of us from 24/7 vote on every week. And I'll tell you, my ballot for week 7 looked pretty significantly different from week 6, but I like that. And I think, again, it signals how small the gap between these teams are. I think if you set up tiers of where teams are right now, I mean, you've got a lot sort of in the middle and waiting on some of these teams like a Texas A&M who, you know, honestly, I'd kind of written off with how they showed up against Notre Dame, but it's playing really well coming off that Missouri game. So I think it makes for a very exciting situation. It makes for some really exciting games going forward that, you know, we understand that some of these teams have the capability of pulling some more upsets. And if they do that, well, we're going to have to rewrite the ballot and figure out what we're going to do for next week.
He writes for Dogs 247, Jordan Hill, joining us here on ESPN 106.7. We flip gears really quickly over to Georgia men's basketball. And in about 10 days, they've got an exhibition against Charlotte. Looks like they have another one against UCF before the season opener on November 4th. We're less than a month away from college basketball beginning. Jordan, what can you tell us about that Georgia basketball team?
Yeah, I think it's going to be one that is going to be really worth watching, and it's one that I think will be on that NCAA tournament bubble around probably 9th or 10th in the SEC, which I think you're going to see that amount of teams get in, especially with Texas and Oklahoma joining the conference. And it's going to be really exciting to watch this team early on, a lot of newcomers that people are excited about, probably none more so than five-star forward Asa Newell, a huge pickup for Georgia this offseason. But they got 5 transfers in. They got 4 high school guys joining the 3 returners from last year, none bigger than Silas Demery Jr., the point guard, a guy that Georgia scrimmaged last Friday and heard a lot of good things about Silas and the progress he's made getting ready for his sophomore year. But also Blue Kane and Dylan James, guys coming back from a season ago. So I think there's excitement. I think that this team feels like it took a step forward as far as its defensive presence, especially down in the around the glass, that they like the additions they've made, getting better, getting ready to play better defense down low. I think this is a team that's going to be worth watching. I don't think they're nowhere near the caliber of a team like Auburn or even Alabama and some of those teams we expect to contend for the SEC. But I do think this is going to be an improved team. Getting more wins is going to be very difficult, again, with two teams joining the conference. But I think there's a lot to be excited about. I think this could be a fun team to follow this year.
I like their non-conference schedule that they have. I mean, a game against Georgia Tech in Atlanta, have Marquette, St. John's, Notre Dame, Grand Canyon, a team that's made the tournament a time or two. I mean, some really fascinating matchups before that conference schedule kicks in, where we've already decided nobody has it easy in SEC basketball this season. There's tough road trips everywhere, even tough home games as well. So look out for Georgia, a team that I still believe is on the rise. They got a phenomenal head coach and talent that continues to come through the door. Jordan Hill, Dawgs 247. He's with us every Wednesday at 2:30. Plug it on, my man. Tell people where they can find you and everything they need to know about Georgia athletics.
Definitely Dawgs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dawgs247. So yeah, Jacob, just getting ready for another home game. I know the fans will be excited to be back between the hedges, get a chance to see what's going on there. Get the previews out there for this game. And then my guy Ben Wolk over at Dawgs247 also sharing a lot of intel on who's coming to town, who's visiting, who are some of the guys Georgia's going hard after. So promises to be another exciting weekend in Athens, and super excited to be on hand and see how this game plays out.
Thank you so much for your time, my man. Take it easy. Have a great weekend. We'll have you on the show again next week.
All right, thanks again, Jake.
That's Jordan Hill, Dawgs247. Check him out at Dawgs247.com. All of your Georgia news, recruiting, and football, basketball, they've got you covered, man. They got a lot of good people over there at the 24/7 sports site for Georgia athletics. 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open. We take our final break in hour number one. Come back, wrap it up. Get into hour number two. That's a quick segment, though. Remember, because it's Double D Wednesdays. Daryl Dapper from Locked On Auburn will join us coming up at 3:15. So all of that here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Got a couple of minutes left here in hour number one. We appreciate Jordan Hill of Dawgs247 joining us as he does every Wednesday, getting updates from Georgia football, Georgia basketball, Georgia athletics as a whole. And I do appreciate him being with us and talking about the Dawgs as they host the Dawgs of Mississippi State. 33, 34, 35 point favorites depending on where you look this weekend. I mean, it still blows my mind that we are openly, I guess Vegas is openly making 33 to 36 point favorites in the SEC. I mean, that's crazy to me. And I said this when Mississippi State played Texas, and yet Mississippi State kept it kind of close. I mean, they lost, but they played Texas pretty well, and the Longhorns did not look good in that football game. And so I ask you, does Georgia win this thing by 30-plus? Even if they don't cover, do they beat Mississippi State by 30-plus? I mean, yeah, Mississippi State's bad, but do they win by that much? I don't know. I have no idea. But speaking of Georgia, I did not ask Jordan about this because I'll just say it like it is. There's nothing he can say. He has nothing to do with this. He has nothing to defend, nothing to answer for. That's not his job. And so I'm not going to ask him about this because there's nothing that he can tell us about this. But there is some news on the Georgia football front. And Christian and I talked about this yesterday, but we've had updated news since. Colby Young, who was active in the Auburn game on Saturday, scored in the Auburn game Saturday. The one who was arrested for pretty bad things on misdemeanor charges of battery and assaulting an unborn child. It was announced earlier today, this morning, Says Kirby Smart provides an update on the transfer wide receiver Colby Young. Smart shared that Young has been suspended indefinitely. Here's the quote from Kirby Smart. He says, yeah, I got to speak to him this morning. He's been suspended indefinitely until this legal matter is resolved. We can't really comment any further on the specifics of it, but I had a good meeting with him this morning. We're committed to continuing to educate our players and do the best job we can of making sure they understand the serious nature of these incidents. It's very unfortunate, but we want to be responsible in decision-making on and off the field. This is obviously a really tough situation, but he is suspended indefinitely until the legal matter is resolved. And look, folks, at the end of the day, that's all Kirby can do. In this particular situation, which is what I said yesterday, there ain't nothing you can do about this except exactly what he did. Until this is cleared up, until we find out, learn whether all of this actually happened or not. Yes, he was arrested, but you are still innocent until proven guilty in this country. He's suspended indefinitely until he figures it out. If it turns out he did this stuff, yeah, he'll probably be kicked off the team. And if he didn't, he'll probably be let back on. But as I said yesterday, this is a different situation here. We're talking personal matters inside the home. Something that Kirby Smart can't control. There's no coach in the world that can control something like that. Now, when you had 15 players in a row get arrested and in trouble for reckless driving, yeah, maybe you can control that. Colby Young's the 7th player this year to be arrested off the Georgia football team. All right, hour number one is in the books. Stick around. Hour number two coming up. We'll have Daryl Daprich for Double D Wednesdays. Locked On Auburn will be joining us at 3:15. He's with us for 30 minutes. We got to talk Auburn football. We got to talk Auburn basketball, transfer portal changes, NLI changes, the change of everything. We'll get into that with Daryl Daprich and a whole lot more. Stick around. Hour number two coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one here of the program, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. I'll have that for you on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Coming up after the show today, we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 in hour number one. Got some updates on the Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, thoughts around the SEC as well. Also, I talked a lot about the NLI no longer existing. That's the National Letter of Intent. And also the transfer portal window dates being moved, shortened for college football and for college basketball. So all of that was in hour number one. Here in hour number two, we're about to get to the phone lines. We're also going to have Daryl Daprich, Double D, join us coming up in about 10 or 12 minutes. He'll be on the phone lines with us talking all things Auburn, football, basketball, college football, you name it. We got you covered with Daryl Daprich, who's with me for 30 minutes every single Wednesday. Before we get to content, though, before we get to the phone lines, want to remind you, That hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7 is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour from 3 to 4 o'clock each and every day here on ESPN. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. You're on the line. Who am I speaking with?
Lynn.
Lynn, all right, what's up, man?
Hey, one of the questions I'd be interested in, that I know you're going to have Dara on, but one of the things I'd like to know is what happened to the good old-fashioned screen pass? Right, because... Hello?
Yeah, I got you.
Right, because I haven't seen that, and maybe I haven't seen it, or it's been obsolete or whatever, I'm not seeing that, and I wonder what, you know, is that still a thing in college football, or is it obsolete? Or
okay, yeah, no, I definitely address that, and I appreciate the call, Lynn. I really do. With a screen pass, you know, I'm not going to say that it is completely obsolete or completely gone. And again, appreciate the call and really appreciate the question. I do think it has gone away, sort of, and not just completely gone, but I don't know. I mean, the screen pass, I've always felt. And look, I am one of those people. I'm not a huge fan of the play just because it's either... I had a buddy tell me growing up, it's either a touchdown or a loss of 10. Like, that seems to be what the result is just about every time. It's either to the house or you're going the wrong way. And I don't know. Maybe coaches have just realized it's not worth the risk. Or if you're talking in Auburn in particular, maybe Hugh Freeze doesn't trust the young receivers to get out there and make the correct blocks. Or maybe with just the athletes that are on the field nowadays, they just would rather throw it downfield and risk it going that way rather than coming the other way. That would be the best answer I could give on that, limb in terms of what we see or maybe lack thereof in terms of a screen pass in college football. Let's get to the phone lines again, 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who am I speaking with? Hello? Nothing? Okay. Well, then we will move on. So what I was going to talk about here, and we'll try to get to the phones in just a second again. What I was going to talk about in this segment was the slate coming up of college football this weekend, because it's phenomenal. I mean, it is unbelievably good of college football this weekend. And I say this every week, especially during football season. And basketball season, we'll try to do this the best we can as well. It's about flipping the page, right? It's about looking forward, looking ahead to what's coming up next. And, of course, we all understand that for Auburn this week, we are off. It's a bye week for Auburn. And Hugh Freeze, and I saw somebody write an article the other day. I didn't read it, but just the headline said, the bye week couldn't have come soon enough. And I said, yeah, it could have. The bye week could have came 2 weeks ago. I would have been cool with that. Everybody else has their bye week already, right? And there's a few other SEC teams, I think a few other top 25 teams that have bye weeks this week. But I'm thinking, man, yeah, that bye week could have came a week ago, 2 weeks ago. This week seven of college football. Auburn's had six games, and they just get their first bye week. It absolutely could have come sooner, if you ask me. But if there was ever a week in the season where there was no Auburn football to watch, and we have to sit around and watch other games in the country, this is the weekend to do it. Because just look around at what we have. You have Friday night football again, right? A top 20 team in Utah goes on the road to Arizona State, who's 4-1 in the country right in their record right now. You have South Carolina going to Tuscaloosa to take on Alabama. How do the Crimson Tide respond? South Carolina should be kicking themselves, right? They feel they could have a much better record than 3-2. You have Texas and Oklahoma, the Red River rivalry going on. The number one team in the country, Texas, taking on 18 Oklahoma. That's at the Cotton Bowl there in Dallas. You have the fourth-ranked Penn State Nittany Lions, who I don't believe in. I don't think they're a top-four team, but what do I know? Out in Los Angeles, taking on USC, who is unranked because they're 3-2. They're 3-2 after beating LSU, falling flat on their face against Michigan, and then letting Minnesota beat them last week. So that game had a lot more spice to it early season, maybe even preseason, but still could be a good one in the Big Ten. Other games going on around college football this weekend. This is not a big one, but it's just one that I mentioned earlier with Jordan Hill. The fact that Georgia is up to a 34-point favorite against Mississippi State, kind of wild to me. Saturday night, Florida is in Knoxville taking on Tennessee. How do the Vols respond? Right? How do they respond to being punched in the mouth and letting Arkansas get one of their bigger wins in recent memory over them last week? And then the two games that I think everybody's going to highlight and everybody's going to have on at the exact same time, simultaneously, TV, side by side, top and bottom, whatever the case may be. Both of them kick off at 6:30. Both of them are nationally televised games. We'll start with the one that the radio broadcast you can hear right here on ESPN 106.7 in the SEC. It's number 9, Ole Miss, 5-1. 1-1 in SEC play. They go on the road to a night game in Baton Rouge to take on the Tigers of LSU, who are currently ranked in the top 25. They sit at number 13. Ole Miss is favored in that game. Did you know that? Ole Miss is favored by 3.5 points on the road, Tiger Stadium, when the sun goes down. Weird things happen there, man. Weird things happen in Baton Rouge. Again, you can catch that radio broadcast here on ESPN 106.7, or it's on television on ABC. And the game we're all going to have on right next to it, it's a top five matchup in college football this weekend. Top five matchup. They don't happen often, but man, when they do, they're a lot of fun. Out in Eugene, Oregon, 6:30 on NBC, the second-ranked Buckeyes of Ohio State and Ryan Day head out to visit Dan Lanning and the Ducks of Oregon, ranked number 3 in all the land. Both teams 5-0, competing in the Big Ten. Remember, this is a Big Ten matchup now. And how about this? Ohio State is favored by 3 on the road there at Autzen Stadium in Eugene. How crazy is that? And both of those big matchups on Saturday night, Ohio State at Oregon, and Ole Miss at LSU, the road team is favored. Road team is favored. And in terms of Ohio State-Oregon, I got asked this question the other day on a podcast of who needs the win more? Who needs the win more, Ryan Day or Dan Lanning? Everybody else I talked to said Dan Lanning. I said, Ryan Day. Ryan Day needs this win because, man, what has he done? I know he's got some marquee wins in the regular season, but Ryan Day at Ohio State has underperformed his entire career, his entire time. Ohio State is the much more talented team, the much better team. Now, they are on the road in Eugene, and it's going to be a great atmosphere, but Ryan Day needs this win worse than Dan Lanning does, in my opinion. Would it be great for Dan Lanning? Yeah, absolutely. Oregon could use it for sure, but I don't know. I just think Ohio State, they've got to show me a little something. And then in terms of Ole Miss and LSU, this is a game Ole Miss has to have. I think Ole Miss has to have this game because you've already dropped one, right? You dropped one against Kentucky, one that you were not supposed to, and that schedule still has some tough tests on it. Oklahoma at Arkansas, Georgia at Florida, right? There are still games on that schedule for Ole Miss, a team that has playoff hopes that they're going to have to get through. And I don't think you can afford, well, I'll say it this way. If you lose this game to LSU, you have to win out. I think you have to win out if you're Ole Miss, if you lose this game on Saturday to LSU. And in terms of LSU, who I think you can make an argument, still has playoff hopes, right? They're 4-1. They're a top 15 team in all of college football. Their only loss is the regular or the first seat game of the year against USC. But they've only played one SEC game. Remember, that's one of those weird teams that's only played one SEC game. Their schedule is not all that bad. I think LSU can afford to lose this game. So you start asking the same question, Brian Kelly or Lane Kiffin, who needs it more? I'm going to say Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss needs this win desperately on the road at LSU on Saturday night. We got a lot to get to with Daryl Dapper. It's Double D of Locked On Auburn. We're going to talk to him coming up next as we continue here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
It's that time. It's that time. It's Double D Wednesdays. This guy joins us every Wednesday at 3:15 to 3:45. You can catch him a couple of times a week on the Locked On Auburn podcast. Double D, Daryl Dapperich, my man. Great to talk to you on this Wednesday afternoon.
Man, it's good to talk to you as well. As we're going into a bye week, kind of strange, but we've got a lot to talk about as it is.
Yeah, and you know, it's going to be a little different not talking about the Auburn game coming up this weekend because there isn't one, but we will definitely recap Auburn-Georgia, kind of reset everything going into the bye week, talk a little college football, the news, or I guess the results from a week ago and what could be this coming weekend. But I got to start with what seems to be the biggest news around college football, something that I talked about back in hour number one, which is the NCAA and this council and whoever is a part of it has decided that the transfer portal windows for college football and basketball, for that matter, are going to be changing a little bit. No longer 45 days. It is down to 30 days. It's a 20-day winter window, a 10-day spring window, and both windows still obviously exist. Daryl, your thoughts just on the changes to what the transfer portal will look like starting this season?
I think it's designed to give coaches a little better idea of what their rosters could be. So I think the inevitability of losing a player will still be there. But if you know in a shorter window that player is going to be gone, it allows you to react and counter quickly and do what you need to do. This waiting and wondering and kind of being left holding the bag, so to speak, I think it makes the decision-making for players. You've got to be more decisive if you want to jump in and get somewhere. And then, again, it allows coaches to have a little bit better idea. I know it's just, you know, 15 days or whatever, but that still makes a difference. The only thing I think from a negative standpoint is I think it's going to create a more urgency for people to tamper. And we've already heard Hugh Freeze say something today about the roster tampering is already happening. Look, I know we're not naive. We know it's been happening since the invention of the transfer portal. But I think the urgency and the boldness of, oh, my gosh, I've only got a 30-day window rather than a 45-day window, and, oh, this team's going to take one of my best wide receivers. I better go get another one. It's just a domino effect. And I'd like to see it move to just one time a year where in basketball, one time a year for baseball, one time, whatever, one time. And then it allows you to kind of prepare that way. It gives you a chance to plan. And, again, I want to see stronger, more stringent restrictions put on the transfer portal because of this whole 2-3-4 times people transfer. So I think you need to rein it in a little bit, and I think it needs to just be one period that you could transfer and even make it maybe even shorter. Either you're going to go in or you're not going to go in. And I get it. The argument to that, Jacob, is that people sometimes change their mind. It gives a coach. But that's the other thing, too, is the 30-day window doesn't give you as much time, perhaps, if you're a head coach, to talk the player out of entering the transfer portal or hopping back, you know, hopping out of it and staying with your team. So there's pros and cons on both if you're a head coach. But again, I don't know what the NCAA is trying to do. I've never seen an organization do a 180 more than the NCAA in the last 10 years. They went from being the most stringent, legalistic, you know, only be selective in what schools you gave a break to, but being like this strong-armed organization, to now being everybody's favorite uncle that passes out candy. I mean, they've changed completely with NIL and all this other stuff. It's like they've just, they've washed their hands of it.
I feel like
I don't know. It's surprising. It really is.
I think it just comes from a spot, Darryl, I didn't mean to cut you off. I think it comes from a spot of a fear of becoming irrelevant. I think that's what it is with the NCAA.
And litigation. Too. I think the Miami situation from a few years ago really stung them when they got sued. I mean, I think that the NCAA is an organization that has become a little bit irrelevant and is afraid of litigation and doesn't know what to do or how to handle certain situations and certain scenarios. And they used to, and I don't know if it's because they have less enforcement agents now than they used to. I don't know if it's because they're snake bit. I don't know. But if there's ever, I know that people talk about how they want to keep college athletics separate from professional athletics. But the model right now is so similar with free agency, with the transfer portal, with being paid to play with NIL, and you don't have to have anything to do with name, image, and likeness. There is nothing to do with that, like it was supposed to be originally designed. I would like to see a czar. I would like to see a commissioner. I would like to see a strong, strong, no-nonsense college football commissioner that kept the conference commissioners in line and had this in a situation where they could rule judiciously and say, no, if you have NIL in this state, this is how it's going to be worked. It's going to be across the board. Everyone's going to have an equitable NIL opportunity. Everyone's going to have an equitable transfer portal scenario. You can't pick or choose depending on what school and what conference. And just start to tighten this up a little bit, because it's going down a road that I'm afraid in 5-6 years, we're not even going to recognize the college game from what it's supposed to be.
I know a radio podcast personality with the initials DD that I think would receive my vote to be college football commissioner.
Oh, I'll tell you, I was at a function last Thursday at Faulkner University, and I had the opportunity to hear Nick Saban speak. And, you know, a lot of the things that he says sounds good in design. In theory, I mean, there were a lot of nice leadership principles that he talked about that I do believe he believes, and he tells some good stories. And, you know, people talk about how he would make a really good college football commissioner, and I don't know that I necessarily disagree with that. My problem with that is there are a lot of things that were said on that stage Thursday night that came across a little bit hypocritical.
Oh.
And a little bit different now that the rules have changed, knowing what we know. I mean, I think he's a great coach. I think he's the greatest of all time. I actually think he's a good dude. I laugh at what he says, but some of it was a little ironic and a little bit like, really? I mean, so I think I would like to see somebody that probably was not involved with any particular team or organization that maybe was involved in maybe an athletic director that, yeah, maybe an athletic director at a school, but there wasn't a coach or something like that that was involved with, ideally somebody that was never a head coach of a particular team but was in sports administration. I'd like to see even someone like from the NFL, like a deputy commissioner from the NFL come and do it. Because I mean, I'm not saying that people would be partial, but I don't know. I think you would need somebody to just have a different set of eyes and a clean slate to do it, because I think it's going to be the wild, wild west. And I think we're going to end up, I think teams are going to be breaking away from the NCAA, and you're going to have all these power conferences and just like this one, like four or five, and, you know, could be regional or geographical. So I don't know. I want to see it reined in. It's become, in 4 years, it's just spiraled out of control. It really has.
what people need to know from the decisions made yesterday and today. The football portal window is now 30 days rather than 45. It is the winter window is 20 days from December 9th. That's the Monday after conference championship games, and will close through December 28th. And then the spring window is a 10-day window now from April 16th to April 25th. And then the basketball portal window, that has changed also. That's from 45 days down to 30. And this is what gets me, Daryl. It will open the day after the end of the second round of their respective NCAA tournaments for men and women's. And it'll go 30 days. And it opens up right in the middle of the tournament, Daryl.
Well, and that takes away headlines from the tournament. Let's say you have a Cinderella who gets into the Sweet 16, right?
Yeah.
A smaller school from a mid-major. And they're going into the Sweet 16. Well, now it's going to be the conversation, the headlines are going to be who jumped where. Or what if you got a team that gets to the has a big first round upset, right? A 13 seed or a 14 seed, or heck, we've seen a 16 over a 1. And let's say that team upsets somebody in the first round and loses in the second round, and then that player, one of their best players, jumps. I mean, because, you know, they don't get out of the second round, and then there they go.
Yep.
Horrible. Horrific. Wait till the freaking season's over to start it and push it a little bit back later. Who cares? To have something like that, I think middle of April, I'll tell you what, since we were talking about corrupt agencies and not having enough agents and people that are, you know, kind of not have your best interest, just have it coincide with tax day. IRS is the same way anyway. Just go ahead and let it be April 15th, right? That's your jump date to get screwed by the IRS, and that's your jump date to go into the transfer portal. The college basketball season will be over. Doing it in the middle of the national tournament is one of the dumbest decisions. There is only one decision that I could think of, looking back on the history of the NCAA, that I've agreed with and nodded my head to. And it came in a movie. Do you want to guess what that is?
Oh, gosh.
Come on now. You know Daryl well. You know Double D. How well do you know Double D? One decision that I applauded that the NCAA made and said, wow, they got it right. They cared about the people. They cared about the institution.
Oh, no.
But it came from a movie.
I don't know.
And it's real. It happened. They did. All right, you ready?
Yep.
When the plane crash happened and We Are Marshall, and they decided to let freshmen play.
Yep.
And people say, oh, that was for dramatic effect. No, they really did it. The NCAA really changed the law or changed the rule for that year for Marshall because of the tragedy and let freshmen play. Now, that ended up being something they kept into effect later on because, you know, Pat Sullivan and those guys couldn't play. But that's the only time I could think of a rule where I'm like, good job, NCAA, you got it right.
To heck with Daryl for college football commissioner. How about Daryl Dapperidge for president, man? We just need more Double D in our lives. Good news is he's with us every Wednesday, and he's with us for another segment. We got to talk some Auburn football as we're into the bye week. We'll talk about it with Double D next.
On the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back, which is why we love having Daryl Dapperidge from Locked On Auburn on the show, because he does that and more. And so, Daryl, before we talk more content, man, tell people where you are, how they can find you, and what all you got going on.
Sure. Let's do the radio appearances first. Monday morning, 7:10 WANI with our good friend Ben Taylor. Then later on that morning at 8 a.m., I'm on with WNSP, the opening kickoff with some guys down in Mobile. With you, of course, 3:15 to 3:45. Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sunday mornings with Zach Blackerby, Locked On Auburn podcast. So every other Friday, on your sister station there where you guys simulcast, ESPN The Ticket. I'm on every other Friday at 11:40 with our good buddy Doug Amos.
All right. Well, I know
who,
you.
If anybody is, you know, wants to have the point the finger or blame somebody for Daryl Daffrich getting involved in radio many, many years ago, sling those arrows at Doug Amos, because he's the man that made it happen.
He's the reason, really?
Yeah, he reached out to me back in 1998, and we started doing Faulkner University basketball together. He's the play-by-play guy, and I was the color guy, and then that evolved into some Troy, doing some stuff for Troy, and then co-hosting the show with him, the Max Roundtable. But yes, Doug gets credit for getting me involved in sports radio. So either thank him or curse him. That's up to y'all's listening audience, but he's the man. So when you see him at Chappie's in Auburn, when he does these shows out there for Football Saturdays, be sure to do either or.
Well, I knew I owed him a couple cold snacks, but I'll give him a few more just for getting you into radio, because, I mean, you and I are having just so much fun on Wednesday afternoons, and I guess we've pushed it off long enough, Daryl. I guess we'll talk about Auburn losing to Georgia on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, it's not the first time we've talked about a loss on a Wednesday this season, but I figured instead of talking about the game itself, since Auburn lost, I figure we should dive in on what Hugh Freeze was wearing on the sidelines and how we disagreed with the shirt and visor that he wore. Is that okay with you?
I don't even understand. I mean,
is that not the dumbest thing? I mean,
it is. But look, fans gravitate towards and absolutely fixate on things that are so stupid when their teams lose. They look for things and they look for reasons. Auburn fans are up in arms about this 4th-and-1 thing, and I get it. It matters if you're on the same page. But at the end of the day, it's semantics, and whether Peyton Thorne checked out of the play or didn't check out of the play, Auburn's not winning the football game. Let's look at other things that could have happened during that game that could have helped them win. The same thing with this Alabama stuff, what DeBoer is wearing on the sidelines. I mean, Gene Stallings used to wear a jacket and tie. I don't remember people getting angry when Saban started wearing, you know, the quarter zips or the golf shirts, because he did. It went from shirt and tie, Pat Dye.
Yep.
Shirt and tie and jacket to Terry Bowden. Well, Bowden wore a shirt and tie too, but Tuberville wearing a polo, you know, and then basketball coaches are doing the same things, right?
They Thank went from God, shirt yes. ties
to now they're wearing polos. Who freaking cares? It doesn't, I mean, everybody's doing it. It's not like, you know, it's just a natural progression of coaches wanting to be comfortable. Was it a t-shirt? Yeah, but I'm well aware of what kind of t-shirt it is, because I have someone close to my family that does gear and all that. It's that Nike dry fit. It's supposed to be the coach's choice. They like it. It's comfortable, blah, blah, blah. Maybe we'll see Auburn in that some next year, finally that they're a Nike school. But people just look and fixate and focus on things when they get beat that they normally wouldn't even think twice about or look twice at. The Georgia game, to me, was an example of Auburn doing what they should have done against Cal, Oklahoma, and Arkansas, and that is didn't beat themselves, but that doesn't work against Georgia. That doesn't work against a superior opponent. You better make plays. You can't just not beat yourself and out-talent somebody. Against Georgia, you got to make Georgia turn it over. You got to make some big plays that, you know, you've got to make plays and force the issue. Auburn did not. When they had opportunities to make plays, they dropped touchdown passes in the end zone. They ran the wrong way on 4th-and-1. I mean, they just could not cover in this missed tackles in the secondary. So although a lot of it wasn't self-inflicted, like it's been to the losses with teams that they were favored, you can't just go out status quo, take care of the football, and say, we're going to win, we're not going to beat ourselves. Ain't going to happen. So that's what happened. Georgia's better. Georgia has a better roster. And you had to turn over Georgia a couple times, and you had to make some plays, and you had to get creative, and you had to out-scheme them, similar to what Auburn did against Alabama in the Iron Bowl last year, and similar to what Auburn did against Georgia last year. But, you know, with a better roster than last year's, they couldn't get it done. And I think it's the bye week comes at an absolute perfect time. And there's some things that need to be figured out over there from a cohesive standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, from a culture standpoint. And there's a lot of people, players and coaches, that need to look inward, and maybe the off week will enable them to do that.
And I think that goes along the lines of what I've been saying so far this week is I think Auburn played a better game Saturday than we've seen for most of the year. And I've posed this question. It doesn't matter. But if Auburn played that way against Cal, Arkansas, or Oklahoma, they probably win those games. And they were probably undefeated going into Georgia. And the main question I posed, Darryl, was, if it wasn't number five Georgia across from them on Saturday, Auburn probably had a good chance to win that game anyway.
True. I agree with that. And I said this on the post-game podcast. It's just, you know, you don't want to look at moral victories or participation. I mean,
right.
You know, when they lined up for the opening meeting for the coin toss, nobody handed different colored wristbands to each other. It's not upwards football. And that's the problem, is you don't want to get satisfied or come. There is a faction of Auburn fans that felt like Auburn kicked that field goal to make it look not as bad, to make it 28-13, which looks different than 28-10. Well, I don't know. I know that Muschamp used to do that at Florida. It seemed like he did not want to get beat late when he was trying to save his job, get beat bad.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I think that at some point, you either trust the transfer portal, the roster that you've built. You cannot tell me this team may have on it at the end of the year, Jacob, a 3,000-yard passer, a 1,000-yard rusher, and a 1,000-yard receiver. Had you told me that in August, I would have said Auburn's winning 9 games. What I didn't expect is for them to shoot themselves in the foot over and over and over in multiple games, whether it was turnovers, stupid penalties, not getting off the field on third down, running wildcat from 4th-and-1, whiffing on blocks, procedure penalties, not tackling in the secondary. I mean, hitting somebody out of bounds to extend a drive, not getting off the field on a substitution penalty when you've gone 3 and out on the first drive of the game.
Ugh.
Instead of Georgia punting,
yes.
Georgia scores a touchdown. That's finding ways to lose. And we can talk about freeze, we can talk about the 4th-and-1, we can talk about all these different components, but you better start talking. You can't talk about one thing, you have to talk about a multitude of things. And that's what happens when teams are 2-and-4. It seems like nothing goes right. Sometimes I've seen off weeks change that around and flip the switch. For whatever reason, teams come out of off weeks at 3-3 or 2-4. They get some things worked out. They get some things reduced. They add some things. They take things away. They make different decisions on personnel that are helping them, some that are hurting them. They adjust accordingly. And it's not unheard of for teams to come out of bye weeks and go on little mini runs. It could happen, and it could happen starting with the Saturday game against Missouri, which doesn't look as daunting as it did, but now Vanderbilt and Texas A&M looks worse.
Yeah.
So that's Auburn's luck, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah, Missouri, that game's winnable. Yeah, but the cupcake checkmark you had against Vanderbilt.
Take that away.
Where you take that away, and me thinking that A&M was struggling and barely winning and was overrated by beating Bowling Green and losing to Notre Dame and barely beating Arkansas. Well, that barely beaten Arkansas team just went out and beat Tennessee. And Texas A&M just took care of business, you know, in a big way against Missouri.
And so sits on top of the SEC standings, Darryl.
Yeah. So, exactly. And so, I think the only thing that I've seen this year that I thought I would see right now is Texas. Like top to bottom, I didn't think Auburn and Mississippi State were going to be the doormat. I didn't think Alabama and Georgia were going to have a loss already. I didn't think Vanderbilt was going to be as good as they are, better than they are. So there's a lot of things right now that just are topsy-turvy upside down. And, you know, I don't know. There's still 6 games left. A lot could happen in 6 games you go ahead and beat Missouri and then sneak up and beat Kentucky on the road, and you're right back in business with maybe obtaining some of your goals. It's still there for Auburn, but they have to get out of their own way. They have to start. I mean, Peyton Thorne is not playing bad. People don't want to hear it. They're either in the pro free
you got them going now.
Thorne.
Oh,
go
goodness.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, that's what I'm saying. He's not – it's like they think that – I get it. He's not winning games for you.
Right.
But at the end of the year, when and stats are for chumps, I get all that, but all you wanted to see was Peyton Thorne improve statistically, and he has, but he's thrown too many interceptions. I get that, and he's – but he's also made some plays, and we'll see. I think that with six games left, a lot could happen. A lot could happen with him. A lot could happen with the running game, and a lot could happen with these freshmen that are getting valuable, valuable experience.
Well, with the bye week, my thing is this, right? We complained through the first four games, heck, even the first five games of don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over. Well, you fixed that, but other problems arose, right? And so with the bye week, my thing is, okay, can you solve the communication problems? Can you solve the drop passes? Can you solve the bad penalties and fix all of those things without other problems coming up, Daryl? Because what you just said in your statement right there, if that happens, Auburn has a chance to beat Missouri and beat Vanderbilt and A&M. And heck, we can make an argument that they could beat Alabama at the end of the year.
The problem is it enough time? Do you just change your spots, your colors over a two-week period? If there's a trend, you are what you are, perhaps. And it's in your DNA.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not. I think you can. I think you can start playing better as the season goes on. I think there's a lot of examples of teams that struggled early, and then by the end of the year, people are making statements like, oh, glad you got them early in the year. No one wants to play so-and-so right now. But is it too little, too late? Is Auburn who they are, and can you just wave a magic wand and get some of those problems corrected over a bye week? I don't know. They seem snake bit to me. I watched a lot of college football over the years, and I still scratch my head at some of the ways Auburn is finding ways to lose games. And I don't know if you can wash that off. I mean, I'm saying you can, but I don't know if they will. I'm saying it's possible. I think the freshmen are the hope. I think the freshmen that haven't been a part of this culture that's been going on since Harsin's been there and this losing culture, they want to win. They're used to winning. And I think they could be, you know, the hope for this football team the rest of the year.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up. I'm glad you bring that up, because I've had people tell me, and we'll answer this and I'll let you go, should Auburn not necessarily pull the plug, but go full young, full youth, full freshman and just say, look, our upperclassmen just ain't getting it done. Let's play for the future. Let's play those guys that want to be coached and want to win, and let's just play for the future and see what happens. Should Auburn go to that out of this bye week?
No. It needs to be a hybrid. Because if you take that approach, you're benching Hunter, Thorne, Fairweather, and KLF, and you're benching Asante and Jaron Thompson and Jason Jones. So you see what I'm saying? That you can't do it across the board. What you do is you look at the positions that have been producing and you leave them alone. You incorporate for depth some freshmen, you know. The running back room's experience, but freshman wide receivers like they're doing behind KLS, play Michael Riley more, play more of the young safeties, but you don't, you play the freshmen at the positions where people aren't getting it done. Maybe on the offensive line, maybe at linebacker, like a DeMarcus Riddick, maybe play Blockton more, definitely keep playing Caleb Harris and Crawford till the wheels fall off. Because they are upgrades over what you had. Sylvester Smith, play him more. That's what you do. You don't go straight across the board, because there's some really good players that are contributing that would fall out in that wash if you did that.
Yeah, I totally get it. I totally get it.
Do a hybrid, baby.
A hybrid
will get it done.
Hey, yeah, that's my go-to on the golf course, man. When in doubt, pull out the 5 hybrid. I can't hit a driver, but I can hit that hybrid, baby. And that's
what the hybrid is an illegal club. So I don't know what the crap you got it in your bag for.
Hey, I ain't playing for money, man. I ain't that good.
Well, I don't play for money either. Not since the last time I had a partner that had his range finder and missed it by 100 yards. I'm like, dude, did you even take math? In high school, I almost killed people eating lunch out on the veranda. I've never played golf. He's a coworker. I'm like, dude, and you're measuring stuff at work? That's just embarrassing.
That's
bad. Like, you're only 100 yards. You're 150 out, and I was 100 out, and it was ugly.
Hey, man, always appreciate you. Always appreciate your time. This is one of my favorite segments each and every week. Thank you so much for being here every Wednesday. I know this was not what you had on the books, but I appreciate you taking the time and being with us this Wednesday. Have a fantastic weekend, my friend, and we'll have you on again next week.
You too, and thoughts and prayers to Florida. I hope everybody stays safe, brother. You have a great week.
Thanks so much. You too, man. That is Daryl Dappert's Double D joining us here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. And yes, as he said, my boy Daryl is supposed to be on a trip right now, and that is not happening. And this goes back to what we talked about last week. Was that last week? Maybe the week before when that first hurricane came through. And I know we got to get to a break, but there are bigger problems than football games being canceled or trips being canceled. I mean, we're talking about people losing their lives, losing their homes, losing their pets, losing everything they own. They just got smacked in Florida, and it's about to hit them again. So I'm with Daryl, man. Thoughts and prayers on that. But we do appreciate him taking the time on this Wednesday to talk to us, as he does every Wednesday. 30-plus minutes, man. We went long today. We got to get to our final break so I can get out of here. After this, we'll have our final segment, wrap it up, hand it off to The Drive. All that coming up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show, man. It's been a lot of fun. We had Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 in the first hour talking all things Georgia as they, of course, beat Auburn this past week, and they now host Mississippi State. 34-point favorites is Georgia this weekend. Pretty crazy to see 2 weeks in a row an SEC team favorite over another SEC team by 30-plus points. It was Texas over Mississippi State a week ago, but Mississippi State did cover that spread. They did keep it close, so we'll see how that goes this weekend. But we talked to Jordan in hour number one. Also talked a lot about this transfer portal stuff with the windows now shortening for college football and college basketball. They've moved a little bit. Winter window and spring window still existing, but it's down to 30 days now, 20 in the winter, 10 in the spring, plus National Letter of Intent, NLI, not NIL, NLI, no longer a thing. You don't sign a piece of paper that says I'm coming to play for you and you give me this in terms of a National Letter of Intent. Why? Because contracts are on the way. That's my prediction. I've been saying it for months, possibly years. So keep that in mind. We'll have more on that, I'm sure, as the week goes on. And then we just got off the phone with Double D, Daryl Dappert. You can catch him a couple of days a week on the Locked On Auburn podcast with our friend Zach Blackerby. He was with us, talked a lot of about the transfer portal stuff. Also talked about Auburn and Georgia, what Auburn needs to do in the bye week, kind of looking ahead. And so, been a wonderful show today, and I really do appreciate you all being here. Whether it was one segment, 1 hour, the entire time, really do appreciate you making this part of your everyday routine. And if you did miss any of the show today, you can go and catch up with the podcast version of the show. We just take the audio, put it on our station website conveniently for you. So you can go find that at ESPNAU.com. Want to shout out the Orthopedic Clinic as they sponsor the second hour of the show each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN Radio. So thank you to the Orthopedic Clinic for bringing you the 3 to 4 o'clock hour every day. Be sure you check them out at theorthoclinic.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's Thursday, which means it is jam-packed Brad Law. Got to check to see if that's a thing since it is the bye week. He may be out golfing or laying out or something. Who knows what Brad's going to be up to. I'll double check on that. But I do know we're going to have Auburn High's head football coach Keith Etheridge will join us tomorrow. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will join us tomorrow. And you never know who else will be around on the show coming up tomorrow. So that's when I'll be back 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.